say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another chance.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, have we got another great show for you today. I'm just telling you what. Here's the deal. The book is entitled The Career Toolkit. I want you right now, wherever you're at, well, unless you're listening to this on a podcast and you're driving down the road or something like that, I want you to get on the phone and I want you to call every college student that you know and tell them you've got to listen to this show because it's going to be that good. I also want you to call everyone you know who's having a career struggle and I want you to call them and say you have got to listen to this show because this is that good. I want you to pay very close attention because you may be in a career where you think, you know, I need to get out because I'm stuck and I'm not sure what I should do and what do I need to know? Because can I tell you something? Mark Hirschberg, who is with me today. Yes, Mark Hirschberg, instructor, MIT. He's with us here today. Yes, that Mark Hirschberg, who is actually like a world champion ballroom dancer. That Mark Hirschberg. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's him. Okay, he's retired from it, but it is him, okay? Listen, the book, The Career Toolkit, unbelievable. I told my wife, I said, she said, so how's the book? And I said, wow. I said, baby, this is really a great book. And I'm a little mad because Mark and I had taught college and careers. He taught his at MIT. I taught mine at other colleges. But I said, I really wish I'd written this book. But he did. And so I am grateful for it. But before we get to him, let's do what we do every week, right? I'm going to walk you through the four areas of your life for four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. And, you know, here's the deal. We've had a lot of Special Operations Forces people on the show, Navy SEALs, Green Berets, Delta Force. And, you know, they've all said the same thing. You know, you have got to every day be working on yourself in these four areas. You've got to work on yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And so what we do is we do this rating scale on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I'm not doing very good, 10 being, man, it doesn't get any better. And we rate yourself on those four areas so that you have a place to start to where you can go to improve yourself, right? Because it's all about improvement. It's not about the number. It's about where am I at now and how can I improve myself? So physically, on a scale of 1 to 10, you're going to rate yourself, 5 being average, on like these four elements, like your diet, exercise, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep. If you were to rate yourself on that scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average, what would be your number be? And then whatever that number is, it is, and that's okay. But then what can you do? This is the thought process. What can I do right now to change that number? Right? You know, could I do something right now? Could I stop eating something? Is there something I could just take off my diet? Listen, you can't do it all at once, right? Mark even talks about this in the book. You cannot do everything all at once. Right? But pick something, all right? And start with that. And then once you make that a habit, then make the next thing a habit. Mark talks about that in the book. It's really true in life. And that's the beautiful thing about what he's written. He's telling you things about life. So you've got your first number. That's your physical number. Your second number is your mental number. Mark talks about this too in the book. You know, the truth of the matter is we do have two halves of a brain. We have a left brain and a right brain. I did it opposite with my hands, but we do have a left brain and a right brain. And the truth is left brain is a lot more quantitative and the right brain is probably a little more qualitative, certainly more creative and is certainly not as logical as the left side. So we want to work both halves of that brain. How do we do that? Well, one of the ways you do that is you read a book. This is a great book because it exercises both halves of your brain. But there's so many ways for you to do it. But one of the ways not to do it is to be just sitting on your couch and letting things come at you. You have to be an active participant in your mental growth, right? Whether that's taking up an instrument, learning a foreign language, whatever that may be an active participant. I tell my coaching clients all the time, I don't have a problem with you listening to books. Take notes, right? You can listen to books all you want, but take notes on the book. Because the thing is, you want to be able to take this information, right, and do something with it. Because it's okay to have information, but then you have to turn into action. And that's part of our mental growth. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself? All right, you got two numbers. Third number is the emotional number. And, you know, we talk about emotional quotients and emotional intelligence on the show a lot. But we're really talking about two things. One is how well do you control your emotions under stress and pressure, right? And then two, how well are you able to tap into the emotions of other people? By the way, I will be completely honest with you. I had a bad week last week. Oh, I had a bad day. I had a bad moment. I lost control of my emotions. I did. I'm going to be really honest with you. And I had to apologize. I had to take extreme ownership for it because I was wrong. I let my emotions get to me. By the way, Mark talks about that too. About, you know what? You can't let your emotions get to you. I did. It doesn't happen often, but it did happen. But I also had to take ownership for it. I had to move on from it. But it does happen, right? But then tapping into the emotions of other people, that means that you have to have an emotional vocabulary. And that emotional vocabulary means that you've got to learn the subtleties of our emotions. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself in those two areas, right? And then what can you do to change it, right? Most of it is control. The fact of the matter is, I really did have control over my emotions, and I didn't make the right choice. That's really the truth. But we can make choices over our emotions. It is possible. It's not easy, but it's possible. The fourth area, all right? You got three numbers. The fourth area is the spiritual area. And here's the deal on the spiritual area. A lot of people don't believe in the spiritual area. And I understand that. But here's the thing. If you remove the physical, the mental, and the emotional, what you pretty much have left is the spiritual. And you know what? We all have faith in something. We all believe in something. Even if you don't believe in something, you're believing in something, right, by default. The truth of the matter is you believe that something's going to happen in the future, right, and you prepare for it that way. Well, that's faith. Faith is spiritual. But we also run to something when we have problems in our life. We run to something that we believe in that's going to help us bring us back to some sort of center or peace or contentment. Right? Whether that's God or nature or meditation or whatever that may be, we run to that to give us some sort of sense of solace. The question is, how is it working for you? Right? And if it's not working, what do you need to do to change it? Right? And how well are you tapping into it so that you are at a sense of peace and you are centered? Right? And that's your fourth number. Whatever that number is, that's your fourth number. And then what do we do? Change that. And you know what? These four numbers are like the legs of a chair, right? If the numbers are uneven, right, and legs of a chair uneven, sitting in there creates bad posture. By the same token, if all the numbers are really, really low, well, you can't sit at a normal table and do what you need to do to eat healthily so that you can have the nutrition to be the best person that you possibly can be. But speaking of somebody who's got their legs even and at the right height, his name is Mark Hirschberg. From tracking criminals and terrorists on the dark web to creating marketplaces and new authentication systems, Mark has spent his career launching and developing new ventures at startups and Fortune 500s and in academia. He helped to start the Undergraduate Practice Opportunities Program, dubbed MIT's Career Success Accelerator, where he teaches annually. At MIT, he received a BS in physics, a bachelor's of science in electrical engineering, computer science, and a master's in engineering, in electrical engineering and computer science, focusing on cryptography. At Harvard Business School, Mark, it's easy for everybody else to say, at Harvard Business School, Mark helped create a platform used to teach finance at prominent business schools. He also works with many nonprofits, including Techie Youth and Plant a Million Corals. He was one of the top-ranked ballroom dancers in the country and now lives in New York City, where he is known for his social gatherings, including his annual Halloween party. Gosh, I hate to miss that. As well as his diverse cufflink collection. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome for the first time to A New Direction, Mark Hirschberg. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, Mark, I tell you what, I loved this book. I just love this book. I told you off the air I told my wife, she said, how's the book? I said, man, I love this book and I wish I would have wrote it. I was so jealous I didn't. You did. Let's just dig right into it. You talk about by the end of this book, you'll have developed a wide range set of skills for your career, which is what this book is about. And you will be able to create a plan to get you to where you want to go and apply the other skills both strategically and tactically to accelerate your career. So when you wrote this book, and it is absolutely true, everything that you stated in this book is absolutely true, and this book is for, I'm going to let you say that. I had an idea that this book was for anybody who was in a career challenge, but you tell me who this book is for.
That's anyone with a office career.
Okay.
If you work in an office, whether you are a secretary to the CEO, this book can help you create and navigate your career plan. It can help you develop these skills like networking, leadership, negotiations, communication, skills you're going to use every day no matter what your job is. And this can help you if you're a college student, right out of school, mid-career. I have people in their 40s and 50s saying, this is so helpful. Because yes, I've known about networking. It's not a surprise. We've all heard it. I never really knew how to do it.
Right.
Or I never thought about how to negotiate. And this is so important. So it's really for anyone, if you are in an office job or trying to get into one, this book can help you.
Yeah, I agree on all those accounts. It really can. Let's dig right into it. The book is divided up into three sections: careers, leadership and management, and then interpersonal dynamics. So let's go to the career section and let's talk about chapter one, the career plan. And you have a quote by Professor Jason Rosenhaus from James Madison, who said, always have a plan. Even a bad plan is better than no plan at all. And I think when people hear the word career plan, they start to panic. But you don't want people to panic when it comes to their career plan, do you?
Not at all, because people think, oh my God, career plan. I have to figure out 30 years. I have to write it all down. And what if I get it wrong? Okay, well, you're not going to get it right, but that's okay. Think about your plans at work. If you have a year-long project, you're never going to say to your manager, yeah, I'm not going to bother with a plan. Let's skip the budget, skip the plan. Let's just wing it and cross our fingers and hope in a year we got it all done. Right? Your manager's not going to accept that. Now, you're going to create a plan, and I guarantee whatever you write down, that's not how it's going to go. We know you're going to, oops, we forgot about this, or we had a setback, or maybe something good happened, you got further. It's going to change. And that's why we know whenever we have a project plan, we check in and revise it. Your career is decades long. If you can't even go 1 year without a plan, how are you going to go decades? But if you have to adjust a one-year plan, of course you're going to be adjusting your 30-year plan. So don't think about, I have to write it all down, I have to get it right. Create that plan. It's fuzzier the further out you go. Create just a general overarching plan. Fill in the details later and know that's going to change. And when you think about it that way, it's no longer quite so scary. The other quote, I don't think I put this in the book, but I use it in my talks. Eisenhower famously said, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. So as long as you are trying to plan, as long as you're going through this, you're going to benefit.
You talk about that in the book, as a matter of fact. You don't use the quote, but you talk about that. The important part of the plan is that you just are trying. I think what happens is we get so, I use the phrase, we minor on the majors and we major on the minors. And what happens is we get so focused on the details, we don't see the importance of the overall overarching vision that what we're trying to accomplish here with the plan. And I think, and you kind of really do pull that out, because you talk about one of your subheadings is setting sail, and you talk about what provisions do we need for the journey. And I thought that the inputs to a career plan were really, really important. So you talk about things like personal needs. Well, let's talk about personal needs. What might somebody need personal needs? Why would we want that in a career plan?
When people think career plan, they think, well, this is my job. This is what I do from 9 to 5. But your job is really part of your larger life. Mm-hmm. And if you're only planning for your job and not the rest of your life, you're not going to be making the right choices. So it begins by thinking with what you want out of life. What type of lifestyle do you want? Do you want lots of money? Do you want those 3 vacation homes? Are you comfortable just saying, look, as long as I know I'm not worried about, you know, how am I paying rent this month, I'm fine. Are you the type of person that loves your work and you want to really throw yourself into it and you don't mind working 50, 60 hours a week because you love it? Some people say, you know what, I have a job. I want to be there 8 hours a day, collect my check, and then I want to go do something else. I want to spend my nights and weekends with my family, out camping, whatever.
Right.
That's what the job is for, to allow me to do something else. Those are different goals, but it comes from your life, not your job. So you have to understand the larger life that your job and career fits into.
Yeah, I loved these inputs, personal needs, external impact, the idea that making part of your plan, the idea of how much community impact should your career have, you know, that you're going to be part of. I loved that, because I don't think we think about that when we're you know, so often we're just after some sort of a career with a salary, some sort of job with a salary, but the lifestyle options that you mentioned, the job requirements that you want, absolutely, I think are critical and should be part of the plan, and as well as you do. One of the things you talk about is you talk about creating a career plan, and just you say the goal isn't to have a perfect plan, but a general plan to navigate your career. So let's talk about some of the options. You have changing options and constant options. Let's talk about those real quick.
This is something I didn't fully appreciate early in my career, because coming out of MIT, I had all these companies that said, well, we don't care what your major is. We just know you're smart, so we'll hire you. Right? And certainly coming out of school, people think, yeah, it's okay. Like, we know you don't know much. You might think you do. You probably don't know much, but that's okay. We're going to train you up. But once you are X number of years in your career, that could be 5 years, could be 10 years, they say, well, now you're kind of branded a certain way. Now it's harder for you to go somewhere else. And this confused me, because when I wanted to get into consulting around age 30, my former students of mine were saying, oh, join our company. You'd be so good. We'd love to have you. But their managers basically would not return my calls. And it took me a while to understand that they looked at me and said, I thought, you know, I'm just as smart as I used to be. You wanted me 10 years ago. What happened? Like, what's wrong with me now? I'm even better, right? I'm still just right. That smart, but now I have experience. But it was the wrong experience. And I thought, well, now you're a software guy, because I went into doing software startups. You're not a consultant. You have all these skills and habits, and I don't know if they're a fit for us. In fact, it's easier for us to take someone right out of school and train this person the way we want than to get you and maybe change some of your habits. So once we start going down a path, we are perceived a certain way, and we have certain mindsets and skills that may or may not afford us benefits in a different career. So as we go down the path, when we're coming out of school, everything's in front of us, right? Freshman year, you can major in anything. It's all in front of us. But once you pick a major, once you start going down a career path, certain options become a little harder for you down the road. And something we don't talk about a lot in career planning, that you cut off options. Like, that's fine. I'm never going to be a doctor. No worries. Med school's probably aren't going to take me at this point because of my age. I'm good with that. But for some people, say, you know, I might want to do this or that or one of these things, or I'm not sure. Recognize optionality does change over time, and you have to take that into account.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing you should do is you need to have your own radio show, because, man, you have a great radio voice. I'm just going to tell you that right now. If you don't have a podcast, you should. You should have one, because I love your voice. I could sit in there and listen to it all day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You talk about four types of plans, short-term, intermediate, long-term, and vision. And you talk about short-term being 1 to 2 years out, intermediate's 3 to 5 years out, long-term 7 to 12 years out. Vision, which is the most fluid, is 15 to 20 years out. This is a hard thing for people to wrap their minds around, but why is that so important that we have those four types of plans?
And I use four stages in those dates as a starting point. You can do it in three, you can do it in six stages, you can put whatever years you want. But it goes to what we said earlier, that people say, how am I supposed to know what I want to be doing in 10 years and what I need to do? Yeah, you're not going to know that. Your plan 1 to 2 years out, that should be concrete. That should say, I want to get better at selling. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to take some online sales training courses. Right. I am going to practice these skills. I'm going to talk to my mentors or my boss about building this skill set. I have a concrete plan for how to do that, because that's my near term. I know, and I had this in my plan, I knew I wanted to get better at marketing at a certain point. I said, that's not for today. Next 5 to 10 years, I got to focus on marketing. That's it. Just put a little line in my plan. Didn't think about it for a couple of years because I was focused on other skills. And then at some point later, oh, you know what? We're now getting to, it's been 5 years. I got to start focusing on marketing. How am I going to do that? Maybe I should look and work at a marketing company. So I break in stages, because the nearer stages, those are the more concrete, clearer parts of your plan. The stuff further out, fuzzier and more fluid, and that's fine. And so this way you don't feel overwhelmed about treating every phase of your career the same.
His name is Mark Hirschberg. The book is entitled The Career Toolkit. Awesome. Isn't he not awesome? Oh, yeah, he is. And he's going to continue. And you're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, I have two amazing sponsors here on A New Direction. One of them, Epic Physical Therapy. And it doesn't matter. You could be recovering from surgery. You could have an injury. You may have everyday aches and pains. You could be a professional athlete. Yes, professional athletes use Epic Physical Therapy, and you're just looking to move how you improve and how you feel and you move in your sport. Listen, they are going to provide you with a customized treatment plan tailored to your individual needs. They understand the need to treat the entire body as a functional whole, not just the symptoms or the injury. So when you're ready for your epic relief, ready for your epic recovery, ready for your epic results, do not look any further. Start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's epicpt.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, for more than 35 years, they've been helping people all over the world either sell homes or buy homes. And how do they do that? Well, they've created relationships. And then, you know what? Mark Hirschberg's going to talk about that in the Career Toolkit, by the way, when it comes to relationships. Because what he understands and what Linda understands is this, is that, you know what? You take the relationship seriously. It's not about getting something. It's not about trying to get something to happen. It's about making sure that the relationship is real and maintaining them over the course of time. And that's what she's done for over 35 years. That's why her clients, her friends, call her the legend of customer service. So when you're ready to sell your home or buy your home, start with the relationship maker, then maintainer. Start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. Now, you can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction, and I am with Mark Hirschberg, which, by the way, if you've missed the first few minutes of the show with him, you've missed a lot already. The book, The Career Toolkit, is outstanding. Mark, you have an app that actually goes with this book, too, as well. You want to talk about that for just a second so that people can get the app before, you know, right now in the middle of the show, they could probably pull it down and they can probably follow along with this.
You can. If you go to my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com, and go to the app page, there are links to the Android and iPhone store where you can get this completely free app. Now, one thing I know from having read lots of books like this is you read a book, you say, wow, there's great tips, and then you forget it. It's easy to move on to the next book, to something else. And you mentioned taking notes, which is fantastic. I take notes on books. I think it's a great way to retain it, but I know most people don't. So I thought about, how do we help people retain it? Because I'm not in the business of trying to sell you books. I am in the business of trying to help you improve. Mm. The book is one way to do it, but I want you to remember it, not just buy the book and, oh, good, you bought it. I want you to remember this content. So there's a well-proven technique known as spaced repetition. That's a fancy word for looking at it again. When you did flashcards as a kid, that was spaced repetition. Look at it today, look at it a little later. But I know you're not going to create a flashcard app. You're not going to use that. So what I did is I created the Career Toolkit app. So it looks like this. And you can use it one of two ways. Every day, it's going to pop up a little notification on your phone. If you had gone through my book with a highlighter, said, oh, here's a good tip. Here's a good quote. I should remember this. That's what's already in the free app. And it's just going to pop up a notification on your phone each day. You set the time. You want 9 a.m. when you walk into the office, 5 p.m. end of day, whenever. Go, oh, right, that was a good tip. Glad I got the reminder. Swipe, done. Takes 3 seconds each day, but it's going to help you retain it better. The other thing you can do is you can open up the app, and here you go. I've got all the tips organized by category. So you say, oh, you know what? I am about to walk into a negotiation. Mark had all these great tips. You're not going to carry my book with you. So right before you go into that negotiation, as you're on the subway going to the office, not when you're driving there, when you're getting there, you say, I'm going to open up. There is a tip for negotiations. And you can just start swiping through the different tips on the app and get that crash refresher course right before you walk into the negotiation, the interview, the networking event. So you can use it two ways. Either it pops up to remind you, or you can use it to just get that refresher. App is completely free on the Android and iPhone stores, the Career Toolkit app, and you can download it through my website.
Yeah, I matter of fact, I just downloaded it, the Career Toolkit app on my phone. It's got a little blue guy with a red flag, and it looks like a little yellowish briefcase at his feet. And then there's a couple stars around him. So if you're looking for what does the app look like when you're there, that's the one. the Career Toolkit app. I highly recommend it. You heard what it's going to do for you. I'm just telling you. You know what, parents? Here's an app that you want your kids to download. How about that? It's as simple as that. That's an app you want your kids to download. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit in this section, Mark, because I want to talk about navigating a corporation. Because I think there's a lot of people who are in a corporation and they don't know why they don't like it. And then there's people who go, man, I want to work for a corporation. And that's not an easy place to work, is it?
It really depends on what you want. But to your point, you have to understand this. We have been trained in school to answer objective questions. Mm. Say, when did George Washington camp at Valley Forge? Okay, here's the answer. How do you solve a quadratic equation? Here's the answer. Someone asks you a question, you give them the answer.
Right.
And we think, oh, well, this is what I do at work. Someone says, how did we do at the end of the month in terms of sales? Okay, your job might be compile the monthly sales reports. Right. Here's the number. Oh, can we add this button to the software? Okay, here's how we do. I'm going to code that up. And we think, oh, it's just providing answers. Might be doing. The answer might be, I created the button. I created the marketing campaign, but I just give answers. But there's more to work than that, because really work is about understanding the right questions. It's not just about providing answers. Yes, provide answers. If you can't code that software button or figure out how many sales were made this month, you don't have a job, right? That's what you're hired to do. But you also have to recognize there are additional circumstances going on, which is fitting into the company. Corporate culture is a great one. Now, by culture, I don't mean, oh, they've got seven values that we all need to do, customer focus and strive for excellence. Sure, do that if the company really has it. But I'm not talking about what is on the website. I'm talking about reality. I know a guy who said, our company culture, whoever shouts the loudest wins. Mm. That was not a value listed on the website. They never said, we want people who are really loud. Right? They didn't talk about it, didn't admit, but everyone in that group, maybe even the whole company knew, you need to talk over people and shout and argue and scream at times.
Right.
If you want to get your point to be the one others accept, that's the culture. And if you don't stop and think, wait a second, it's not just, hey, I added up the numbers, or I say we should put the button on the left versus right. That was finding the answer. But now there's this other question of, can I shout loud enough? Because that's how I have to sell that answer to people. And if you don't understand that, you're going to not play the right games, right? You're not going to be, you know, you're playing that. Sounds wrong, let me make it clearer. You're going to be playing tic-tac-toe when everyone else is playing Monopoly. And you can't win Monopoly if you're playing by a different set of rules.
Right.
So you need to understand what are the rules. It's not necessarily a bad game.
Right.
Corporate culture has value. But if you don't understand that culture, if you don't understand the dynamics, you're not playing by the right rules, you can't win that game.
Well, I think there's another piece to it. And I agree with you. Because it is what it is. But I think there's, and I hate saying that, but I did anyway. But there is another piece to this, because I did not learn this because I was in academia for a long time, too long, right? And I couldn't understand why I was getting so frustrated. And the truth was, I didn't like the politics. And a lot of people will think, well, there's no politics in university academia. Oh, people, do not be so naive. There certainly is a lot of politics. And I don't play politics. And you make a point. You know, I don't. I'm apolitical, and I don't like playing the political game. And of course, it hurt me. I'll be completely honest with you in that end of my career. But it wasn't for me, and I just didn't recognize it. But I forced myself, because of my degrees, to believing, you know, this is what I had to do. You know, this was supposed to be my career. And of course, what I didn't take into consideration was, hold it, maybe corporate politics isn't for you. That's the thing that I pulled from this book, is that you need to kind of know up front what you're willing to tolerate or not tolerate, or accept or not accept. Did I got that wrong?
You're absolutely right. And by the way, one of my favorite lines is, academic politics are so vicious because the stakes are so low. Academic politics really are tough. And it's really because, you know, at the companies I'm at, and I've lost some political battles. I wasn't good at this early on. people turn over every few years. In academia, you have feuds that last decades.
Oh, yeah.
Both folks are there, and they fight over who has what parking spot.
Right.
Literally, like, your parking spot's one closer, but this is a fight that will last decades. So this is what you get in academia. But, right, corporate politics. Now, lots of companies say, we don't have politics here. Every company has politics. And it's not bad. Politics is not a bad thing. It gets used badly. Let's think about politics that we face. In whatever country you're in, most people hate it. In the U.S. right now, we really hate politics. But here's the thing. Politics, it's a good thing, right? Politics lets us actually have elections and lets us make decisions about where to allocate resources and run government. Mm-hmm. We might disagree with some of those decisions, sure, sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. But boy, it's better than if there was a dictator.
Right.
It's better than if we had no voice. And just like politics and governance, you can say, I don't want to participate. I refuse. I hate it. Well, that's your choice. But if you say, well, I'm not going to vote, I'm not going to participate,
right,
doesn't mean you're not affected.
Right.
Just other people are making the decisions, electing people, and their rules impact you. So when it comes to corporate politics, you can choose not to participate, but it will affect you. Now, at some companies, I use a model that comes from the book Survival of the Savvy, which is a wonderful book. And they say, look, here's this model. You have a spectrum from more political to less political.
Right.
And some companies are more political, some are less political. And it's just about how much relationships matter versus let the results speak for themselves. As you noted earlier, you thought, I have my degrees, I do a good job. Isn't right. that what we're all about?
Right.
I was more on that end as well. So recognize if you don't like the relationship side of it, look for companies that are more just do your work, results speak for themselves. If you like the politics, look for companies that are more relationship oriented. Mm. Now, yes, in both cases, you can be too extreme.
Right.
And we usually think of the extreme on this side of too political. But you do have to recognize, to your point, what company is the right fit for you?
Right. Right. Yeah, this is the thing, you know, and you make a really beautiful point here about this, because, by the way, there is a Mark has put in the book. He's got the nuances of interpersonal communication and relationships and the power of ideas style versus the power of person style. And it really is this piece of about, you know, a lot of times we think people who are political in the corporations are self-serving versus people who are more apolitical are inept. And that's just not true. We just make different choices in how we operate within that environment. And by the way, you did this beautifully.
This all comes from Survival of the Savvy. So they really get the credit, and they let me cite them in the book.
Yeah, well, Seldman and Brandon did a great job. I'm just going to tell you that. Here's the beautiful thing about your book, though. The beautiful thing about your book is you've done so much research and have pulled some of the best pieces from several great books that have made this book even, I think, even better, because you've pulled some of the most salient things. But this idea that that the politics is good or bad, right? Because that was my problem. I saw politics as bad. I didn't see it as a thing that just existed. Now, the fact that I didn't want to play it, right, that should have been my eye-opener to go, you probably need to find something else, because that's just the way this environment is. And I think that's the piece that people have to recognize, because I got demotivated, right? Because, I mean, I was motivated in academia. I wanted to teach. I had this delusion, I call it delusion or illusion of grandeur, of going, I'm going to be this great professor of psychology and it's going to be awesome and I am going to be able to teach and I'm going to be able to help shape young minds to do great things in the future. That's just not the way it worked. There were other things that I had to be a part of that I didn't want to be a part of. I didn't recognize that going in. Nobody told me that going in, and it ended up swallowing me to the point I didn't want to do it anymore. And so I think that's the piece that I pull from this, is that be very clear before you, I mean, keep your eyes wide open, you know, before you go in. That's what I pulled from it.
Absolutely. It's that there is more to your job than just what's in the job description. Mm. You think you show up and you just do accounting or sales or whatever it is the job tells you're supposed to do, but there's this extra layer,
right,
keeping your manager happy, fitting into the corporate culture, dealing with corporate politics. That extra layer, if you don't pay attention to it, you are missing out on opportunity and putting yourself at risk.
Right. Let's move on to the section two, leadership and management section, and let's start at chapter four. Leadership. You say at the very beginning, leadership is a necessary skill for those who want to climb the corporate ladder. Many mistakenly believe that leadership comes from having a leadership role. In truth, a leadership role is earned by having already led. Let's talk about leadership. By the way, that was beautifully written. What is leadership in your view? Because I love your definition.
I talk about influential leadership. Most people think of leadership positionally. I have this title. I am a director, a VP. Therefore, I have authority over others. I am leading. You are commanding. You can say, do this or you're fired, either explicitly or implicitly. That's not leadership. That's directing or commanding. Leadership. The best leaders out there, we think about leaders from the 20th century, people like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, they had no authority. Gandhi couldn't say, hey, you million people, we're going to go march now. Do it because I told you. He said, hey, I want all you folks out there to walk away from your homes, to go on this long journey, to put yourselves at risk physically, risk of arrest. You might get beaten. But we should do this because if we do this together, here is the future we can create. That is leadership. Mm. Right? That's what real leadership is. And so this is why I talk about, don't wait till you get this title or position. You can lead from day one. If you're just out of college, your first day on the job, you can lead by saying, here is the future state. And that might be a new product direction, might be just, let's put the button on the left, not the right. It could be big or small, but here is a future state I envision, and here is why, and selling that idea to other people, not commanding them, but convincing them, and that is leading.
Yeah, you have a simple definition that I really enjoy that you and I talk about. You said a leader is someone who has followers. That's it. If no one is following you, you're not leading. You said, while the definition may seem tautological, it is practical. I just found that just to be so refreshing, because I think, you know, there's all these books written on leadership, and they've been on the show, and I am not trying to cut down any of those books, but sometimes it gets so complicated. But it's really just not as complicated. Sometimes we overcomplicate it, don't we?
Absolutely. And I'm not saying this is it. This is the perfect definition. Right. As you develop in your leadership, read these other books, and they've got all these models of different types of leadership and components of it. But if you are saying, how do I start to lead? This is that great core starting definition, and this is going to put you on the right path.
So then you move on in this chapter, and I love this. You say the standing question is then, quote, what does it mean to have followers? Unquote. So what does that mean then, to have followers?
This is where you get people to buy into that vision. Again, it's not people who are doing what you say because they have to.
Right.
In the military, when I think about military examples, well, I'm the captain and you're the enlisted men, so do it because I said so. They go, sir, yes, sir. In the office, again, I don't have to say do it or you're fired or do it because I'm the boss, but it is kind of implied. If I say, guess what, we're going with this vendor, we are producing a report this way in this format, this style, they say, okay, Mark, because they know I'm in charge. But I try not to lead with implied or express because I said so. I try to get everyone's opinions in and then say, especially working in tech, all my engineers know they can find a job by the end of the day. Tech is in such demand right now. They post a resume right now, they will have a job offer within hours. So I know I can't just say, well, because I said so, they're all going to quit. So even though I, in theory, can command them, I really need to lead them and say, this is why. This is why we should go in this direction. Here's the reason. Get them to buy into it. Now, it doesn't mean they have to agree with everything I do. There's a reason I'm in charge. No one's going to agree with everything I do. I don't always agree with everything I do, but sometimes I have to do it to make other people happy.
Right.
But that is leadership. It is saying, here is the end state, and convincing people to follow, to go along with that, because they have bought into it.
Love that. His name is Mark. Isn't he good? He's so good. I've got this big, huge smile on my face. I just can't get it off. He's so good. His name's Mark Hirschberg. The book's entitled The Career Toolkit. It is fantastic. Thank you, everyone who is watching and listening live, whether that's YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and also CastBox FM. Dana, I think, is out there, and some other folks. And so I just want to thank you all for out there. And all of you driving down the road or wherever you listen to podcasts, thank you for that. And all of you on AM, FM, 24/7. Thank you for listening as well, in course, and in Raleigh. So, but you're listening to Mark Hirschberg and the Career Toolkit right here on A New Direction. Hey, listen, folks, Epic Physical Therapy, the facilities, right? So they're more than one. They offer the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the anti-gravity treadmill. Takes pressure so you can do your running off of you. The Normatec compression sleeves, which are great because, you know, who doesn't need a little compression to make you feel stronger? And the Game Ready, which I love, is ice and compression all at the same time. They're certified in the most cutting-edge treatments available, like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping. That's just a few of them. Look, they are outstanding. They are my therapist. I recommend them to everyone, and I'm recommending them to you because when you're ready for your epic relief, ready for your epic recovery, ready for your epic results, start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's E-P-I-C-P-T.com. And Linda Kraft and team, realtors for over 35 years. They have been serving the world and helping them sell their homes or buy a new home. And you know why they have been able to be at the top of their game for 35 years? It's because it's about the relationship. That's it, plain and simple. It's about relationships. Build the relationship. Make it right. Do the right thing. Get to know the people. Get to know what their needs are. Get to know what their wants are. And then help them achieve the goals that they have in mind. That's what Linda Kraft and Team Realtors do. So when you're ready to sell your home or buy your home, start with Linda Kraft and Team. You can go to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Mark Hirschberg and his book, The Career Toolkit. It's outstanding. He's outstanding. Are you having a good time, Mark?
I'm having a great time.
I got to tell you this, you know, you never know, you know how two people are going to mesh, you know, when you do the show, but man, we're just so on the same page with so much of this. I'm going to jump a little bit further ahead because we are going to talk about networking because it's the one area that we don't teach schools, but you do talk a little bit about the difference between leadership and management. And I would love it if you would help address and maybe clarify some of that for people so that they have an idea of what the difference is between leadership and management and what those differences, they're subtle, but what they are.
It's very subtle, very fuzzy.
Yeah.
There are two quotes that I really like that kind of bookend how I think about them. And the first, this is really how leadership is different than management. Nobody ever managed men into battle. It doesn't explain it, but when you think about it, nobody ever managed men into battle. You kind of get a sense for what leadership is. On the other hand, there's another famous quote, and forgive me, I'm not remembering the sources of these quotes off the top of my head. The other famous quote is, an army marches on its stomach. You can inspire the men to go fight, to go, or men and women these days, to go put down their lives for whatever the cause is. But if you don't have the supplies, if you don't have the food, the weapons, if you don't get the right people to the battlefield at the right time, doesn't matter how well they're led, you are not executing. So you can think about leadership and management about being two sides of the same coin. And really, the way I conclude that section is saying, I broke it down in the book to really get to the fundamentals, right? I try to do very much a wax on, wax off in the book, right? Let's just get to the essence of these skills. But at the end of the day, you're not just doing only wax on, only wax off. You're pulling it together. Good leaders manage, good managers lead, and you're going to be, practically speaking, doing both interchangeably.
Right. The skill set for managing is quite, because it's a little bit more specific. Leadership seems sometimes fuzzy when it comes to what the skill set is. I mean, you do talk about some of the things that you need to know. You know, you need to be a great listener. You need to have empathy. You need to, all of a sudden I've lost my list. but respect, have respect. You need to be a motivator and inspirer, all these things that go into leadership. And I'm not saying you don't need those things in management, but managing people is one of the most difficult jobs that we could ever have. And there's a different set of, I don't know, it's a different set of skill set that you have to think about, because you're not at the top of the food chain, but you're kind of in the middle of the food chain and you're managing people, and that's not easy.
Every manager I know has said the hardest part of the job is managing people. It's not the project management, it's not the budgets, it's not the risk, it is managing people. And that's what makes life difficult. In fact, one of the very first management books I read, and it's one that I believe I quote, it's called PeopleWare by Tom DeMarco, mm-hmm. Timothy Lister. It's nominally about software development. There's no single line of code in the book. And even if you don't do software development, I recommend this book. And they said, look, most software projects fail, not because we can't do the technology, not because, oh, I wish we had a PhD who could solve this problem. It fails because of the people reasons. And this is true for, I think, most projects, whether it's technical or otherwise. It is the people part of it that is challenging.
It sure is. I want to move on to chapter 8, networking, because I was never taught how to network when I was in college. I was never taught to network when I was in grad school. And I am pretty convinced that after reading your chapter, thinking I'm a pretty good networker, I got a lot of work to do, quite honestly, at my age. I hate to admit that, but I started thinking about it going, you know what? I think there's some work to be done here at networking. And I actually belong to a networking group and am on a weekly national show on networking. And I'm like going, man, I almost had that, that imposter syndrome catch up with me going, God, you're lying to people about yourself on this networking program. But you say, and I quote, networking is one of the most talked about and least taught skills. Think about it, you said. You've heard countless people tout the importance of being good at networking, but have you ever had a single class teaching you how to do it? No, I haven't. I don't think anybody has, and yet it is that important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ironic because we know the importance of it. Everyone talks about it, but no one does anything about it.
Right.
But here's the thing, for what you just said, I'm going to share the story of the two campers. I use this in some of my talks. There were two guys camping in the woods, and they're asleep when a bear comes into the campsite, wakes one of the campers. Here's the bear. So he wakes up his buddy, and he says, hey, listen, there's a bear here. We got to get out of here. His buddy goes, oh, okay, and grabs his shoes, starts putting on his shoes. First guy says, what are you doing? Even if you have shoes, you're not going to be able to outrun the bear. The second guy says, look, I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to outrun you. And so even if you say, oh, you know what? I realize there's so much more I have to do about networking. And that's true for all of us. I can certainly get better at networking, at leading, at all the things I talk about.
Right.
But I don't have to be the world's best. I just have to outrun the other guys.
Right.
And you're already outrunning most other people. So no matter where you are, remember, you don't have to, if you're saying, I realize I'm not as good as I thought. That's okay, because you're probably better than others. And if you're thinking, I've got a ways to go, you have a ways to go to be perfect, but you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be better than others. Mm. So when it comes to networking, don't think I'm never going to get this right. Just do better than you are today. It goes back to how you opened the show.
Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, you make the networking definition so simple. And you just said, networking is about relationships. And I think even the best of us who do go to networking events or do networking events, I think sometimes, depending on the circumstances around us or circumstances that we're going through at any given time, we forget that one basic principle.
Exactly.
I just think we forget it, that it's about the relationship. So I want you to start talking about the principle of networking and relationships, because we do get it wrong. I get it wrong from time to time. I'll be the first to admit it. But help me get back on track and help others get on track so that they, as they consider networking events and networking, what that really means.
And here's the thing. Here's why many people get it wrong. Because we have this Hollywood image. When Hollywood wants to show someone networking, they don't show two people spending lots of time together, hanging out, having conversations. That's not telegenic. What do they show? They show someone working the room. And we've seen this. We probably know some people who are good that you walk into a room, 20 minutes later, some guy comes back with a dozen business cards. Look at all these people I met.
Right.
Oh, okay. That look at this guy. He meets so many people. I don't want to do that, especially if you're introverted. And I happen to be introverted. I don't want to be in a crowd of a bunch of strangers and talk to lots of strangers. And so introverts say, oh, I can't network. Well, you have friends. And networking is relationship building. You don't have to meet people in a room of 100. And you don't have to meet them 12 at a time. Meet one person. Sit down for coffee. Have that conversation. You've all had conversations with people. And when you just focus not on how do I add connections on LinkedIn? How do I get these numbers and followers? You focus on one person and say, Jay, I'd like to get to know you better. Tell me about what's going on with you.
Right.
What are your challenges? That's it. That's all it takes. We all know how to do that. And so don't focus on the forest for the trees, right? Focus on those individual trees. Focus on one person at a time and just get to develop the relationship with whoever you are at the moment, recognizing one conversation doesn't make that relationship.
Right.
But it's that next step. And just like your career, you're not going to think, oh, how am I going to do this over 30 years? You're thinking, let me focus on the near term and I'll figure out the rest later. Right. Let me just get to know you over the next hour we're spending together. And then we'll talk again in the future and we'll further our relationship. So that's how you need to think about it. Just focus on the here and the now.
Yeah, I think, you know, being present, right? Being just present in that moment, not worrying about the next person you're going to meet. I think, you know, this is, you know, the beautiful thing about doing this show with one person is, you know, I get to focus on you and I get to listen to, you know, I've read everything that you've written. So now I get to listen to you explain it back and get to hear your voice and everything. And I get to know you in the process of our one-on-one here and as well as everybody around the world that does. I think what happens is that so often though, when you go to a networking event, I think you concern yourself with going, how many people should I meet? How many cards should I get? You know, like you talk about. And the truth of the matter is, and you say this at the end of that first section, you said, a sincere relationship is your only goal. And that's what it should be.
Yeah. Don't worry about the numbers. Yeah. Don't worry. I have to meet lots of people. Generate a strong relationship. And we all know if you talk to 50 people for 3 minutes each, that's not going to go as deep as if you spent an hour and a half talking to one person. That's going to give you a more solid relationship.
Right.
So now, you might meet 50 people if you feel like, oh, I want to meet a lot, but you do need to spend that hour and a half with each of them right. At some point. Otherwise, you don't have a relationship. You just have a business card.
This just translates into LinkedIn, and you and I are on LinkedIn, and we share a real philosophy when it comes to social media. And one of your, I love this subtitle of this chapter. It says, stop trying to sell me your networking. Because you and I both have run across people on social media who say, I want to create a relationship. I want to network with you. But that's not their goal, is it? And stop it. Go ahead, dig it. I'm going to let you have your soapbox here for a moment on this one because we're on the same page.
Yeah, salespeople and recruiters. This drives me nuts. If you want to sell me something, if you want to just cold call me, send me an email, yeah, it will probably annoy me because I get a lot of those, but I can respect that. Look, your job, you got to smile and dial. You got to send out those emails. Fine. Hey, you're pitching and I'll probably ignore you, but that's just part of the game. But when you say, oh, I want to build a relationship with you, if you sincerely think, hey, you're an interesting person, I want to get to know you over 20 years, fine. But if you're saying, I want to build a relationship, because as a salesperson, you know, if we have a relationship, there's higher trust and you're more likely to close the sale, then you're not really looking for a relationship. You're looking for just a way to increase your conversion rate. And that is disingenuous. And I hate that.
It irritates
you give
me.
A bad name to other people who do sincerely network.
Yeah, you and I have this red list of people You, matter of fact, you have a quote in here. It says, build a relationship with others because you want a relationship with them, not because of what they can do for you. That to me is absolutely the key to all of it. By the way, I have heard rumors. You talk about advanced techniques of networking. One of them is throw a dinner party. And I talked about it in your entry. Do you still do the Halloween party?
It got suspended last year due to COVID. I had done it for 23 years. And I think I'm going to hold off this year. I'm in a New York City apartment.
Right.
So we'd pack in 60, 70 people, and it was elbow to elbow at times. With the Delta spike, it's probably not the right year to do it. But right. I am looking forward to once again doing them in the future.
So we're at the end of our time here. If you could leave people with a quick new direction, what would that be?
Here's the key about these skills. This is not like learning math or history. You don't lead by memorizing a formula. There's no three steps and suddenly you're a great communicator. These are subtle skills. They're more like learning a sport. You don't say, I read a book on basketball. Great, I'm ready to play. Okay, I read a book on basketball. Now I need to practice. I need to do shooting drills and passing drills and maybe play some scrimmage games, play a little one-on-one just to practice these skills and get better. And I have to do it regularly. So how are you going to do this with these skills? Create peer learning groups. Create groups of other people. I recommend groups of about 6 to 8 people, but there's ways to do it with larger groups. Say, we are going to get together and we're going to talk about these topics. Now, if you want, you can use my book and I show you how, and you can chop it up and say, we're all going to read these 12 pages and then we're going to discuss it. And it's in that discussion, as we talk about leadership, and I say, I've got this challenge. And you say, oh, well, here's a similar thing I faced. I'm going to learn from you and you're going to learn from me. If you don't want to use my book, because I don't want us to feel like, oh, he's just trying to push his book, you can use any other great book. I list a whole bunch. Jay, you've got a lot of great books that they can use. You can use articles, videos. You can use a great podcast like this one. Listen to this podcast with your group and discuss the topics with your group. So the key thing is you find some starring content you all get, and then you discuss it in a group. And this is going to help you really develop these skills rather than a one-shot. I read a book once, now I think I know it.
His name is Mark Hirschberg. The book's entitled The Career Toolkit. He was awesome, right? Folks, listen, you are in control of your emotions, your attitude, and your effort. Always, regardless of the circumstance, regardless of the situation, take control of it. I'm going to be back next week with another guest. He's going to have another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to my Spanish-speaking audience, hasta la vista.
A new direction, a brand new day. A new direction, things are gonna change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength.